This is Radio Energy News.
Good afternoon, I'm Bryce Arthur and you're listening to the news on Radio Energy. Here's what we'll be talking about in the next half hour. Firstly, our top story comes straight from the streets of Edinburgh, as Scotland's local government watchdog names the city the cleanest in the country. However, local residents are surprised by the announcement, finding the streets in relatively poor condition. Also from Edinburgh, taxi drivers are under attack, with three being assaulted and robbed in the last month. Is this a trend? And what's being done for the driver's safety? Tomorrow is Budget Day, what can we expect? We bring you the latest reviews and predictions. And finally, an Edinburgh man lived in a tree for a week to dissuade property developers. We hear his story.
It's been a conscious decision on my part to put my life at risk in doing this, because last week the developer moved in to this site now that they own the land and this tree was under threat of felling.
But first, the afternoon news bulletin with Erin Brown.
Good afternoon. My name is Erin Brown and here's today's top stories. The Account Commission has released a report regarding the cleanliness of the streets of Edinburgh. They claim that even with the budget cuts, the standard on the streets have remained optimal. Opposing this, the Green Party rejected the claim, having evidence of residents outraged by the lack of service done. Councillor Chas Booth expands.
I think the majority of residents I speak to are pretty angry about Edinburgh street cleaning service. They feel litter is not being picked up properly, dog fouling is getting worse, and fly tipping seems to be an endemic problem in most areas of the city.
The Deputy First Minister has made a statement on the Scottish Government's named person scheme today. John Sweeney has addressed MSPs, stating that he is duty-bound to introduce the bill as Holyrood voted for the service. The scheme, which aims to appoint a named person, usually a teacher or health visitor, to safeguard the well-being of children, has caused much controversy. Judges at the UK's highest court previously ruled against the scheme in July 2016. Due to concerns over information sharing and privacy, the scheme has now been pushed back to 2018. Theresa May's plan for a new wave of grammar schools will receive a £320 million boost in tomorrow's budget. The Chancellor is expected to announce funding for 140 new free schools, many of which are expected to become grammars if legislation changes. Toby Young is a co-founder of a free school in West London and believes the decision represents good value for taxpayers.
The cost of creating new school places in free schools was about a third of the cost of creating new school places under the last building programme. So they are an inexpensive way of meeting the demand for much needed new places.
Researchers from the University of Edinburgh, hoping to develop new treatments for autism, have received a £20 million funding boost from the Simons Foundation. Disorders on the autistic spectrum affect about 75 million people worldwide. The funding will enable them to work more closely with clinical teams that care for children and their families, and allow the development and testing of new therapies. The American-based foundation has pledged the investment for studies into the biological mechanisms that underpin changes in the brain development associated with autism. RAF fighter jets escorted a plane from Bucharest into Birmingham Airport after it experienced communication difficulties. The runway was closed for about half an hour while the freight-carrying aircraft landed at around 7:30 this morning. There were three crew and no passengers on board. A new report revealed that a culture of denial surrounding the extent of problems caused by sectarianism still exists in Scotland. The report, written by academic Dr. Duncan Morrow, said this culture remained an obstacle to progress and that football was only one part of the sectarianism puzzle. Dr. Morrow, who headed an advisory group on tackling sectarianism, also called for a review of hate crime legislation.
There are people in football, I think, who are nervous that they'll get full responsibility for this. We certainly don't believe it's only an issue for football, but we do believe that unless it's seen to be something which football takes as seriously as it takes racism, for example, then in fact it makes all the rest of the work seem as if we're not tackling the issue face on.
The CIA appears to have fallen victim to WikiLeaks, which has published what it claims to be thousands of documents from the agency's cyber intelligence unit. The U.S. intelligence agency has not yet confirmed whether they are genuine. China is threatening action against a U.S. missile system, which is being deployed in South Korea. The U.S. says its missile system is only defensive, to protect against North Korea, and is not meant to be a threat to Beijing or Moscow. Meanwhile, four banned ballistic missiles were launched by North Korea, supposedly in training for an attack on a U.S. base in Japan yesterday. China says it will take necessary measures to protect itself. Former CIA Director James Woolsey commented on the extent of the threat.
And U.S. has substantial forces in South Korea. I think the danger, first and foremost, is there. They cannot reach the United States yet with a ballistic missile that has a target on the surface of the Earth. They're just a bit short of that.
Facebook has been criticized for handling reports about sexualized images of children on its platform. BBC reported dozens of photos to Facebook, more than 80% were not removed. Some pages included images from groups where users were swapping what appeared to be child abuse material. Manchester United striker Zlatan Ibrahimovic has accepted a 3-match ban for violent conduct after elbowing Bournemouth's Tyrone Miggs during Saturday's 1-1 draw at Old Trafford. United, currently sixth in the Premier League, will be without their superstar for Monday's FA Cup quarterfinal at Chelsea. In addition, he will be out for clashes with Middlesbrough and West Brom in the coming week's league fixtures. United manager Jose Mourinho spoke in a press conference following this news.
Zlatan is a big man like I am. Too many years in football. We are not the kind of generation that goes to the media and cries about what happened. So what happened. Game over. What counts is the result, and nothing else matters for us.
You can keep up to date at en4news.com and on Twitter at en4news2017.
Hi there, I'm Bryce Arthur. Tensions are building between Edinburgh Council and Edinburgh residents over street cleanliness. The Accounts Commission has praised high standards despite major cuts in this area in recent years. However, the appraisal was met with some anger as activists claim many Edinburgh residents are angry about increasingly high levels of dog fouling and fly tapping. Our reporter Bryce Donaldson has more.
I am walking down Gorgie Road, one of the roads highlighted in the recent study as being one of the worst roads for litter. However, today, that doesn't seem too much the case. Walking down the main road, there doesn't appear to be any rubbish lying in the streets at all, only the occasional crisp bag thrown over a fence. I'm going to go into some of the local shops and ask what the local shop owners think about it.
Especially at lunchtime, and over the weekend, when you come back on a Monday, there tends to be a build-up. If there's been a match or something, not so much at Murrayfield end, but at the Tynecastle end, if there's something going on, there's a lot of litter. Often I go out and pick up papers, wrappers, and put it in our own bin. You really need a warden, but because they go buy things out the shops, the chip shop, and the takeaways, they're coming along with chip wrappers, packets. They don't always put them in the bin, and they end up. I picked up some at lunchtime there, so I won't have the shop front looking messy. I'll go pick it up ourselves.
After speaking with some local shop owners, it would seem that most think that the kids at the local high school should take more responsibility cleaning up after themselves, and that the council should do more to help.
We spoke to Kate Martin of Audit Scotland, who commented on their report.
So the statistics in the report around street cleanliness come from a report called the Local Government Benchmarking Framework. That's something that's put together by the Improvement Service. So they take all the councils across Scotland and they measure their performance in dozens of different areas and compare them. So we've taken the data from there and we pulled out street cleanliness because that shows an area where sometimes you can cut costs but also not have that much of an impact on the cleanliness itself.
Though they had not spoke to the residents, they believed the streets are of optimal standard.
You know, Edinburgh have reduced the cost of street cleaning by over 50%, but they've only seen a 0.4% reduction in the cleanliness overall.
Chas Booth, an MP for the Green Party, discussed the issue by saying he opposes these findings. He spoke from personal research on areas of Edinburgh, such as Gorgie.
Well, if the Accounts Commission is suggesting that Edinburgh is an example that other councils should follow, then frankly, they need to get out more. They should come and talk to some of the residents in my ward, who will show them plenty of streets in dire need of better cleaning. The council staff do a fantastic job in difficult circumstances, but we have to support them with the right level of investment, and I'm not sure whether the council's been doing that.
Tomorrow, all eyes will be on 11 Downing Street as Chancellor of the Exchequer Philip Hammond dusts off his little red box to deliver the spring budget. This is a special budget, being the last of its kind, as it will move to take place in November later this year, switching places with the autumn statement. So what can we expect to hear from the Chancellor tomorrow? Our correspondent Daisy Smith tries to find out.
Well, we've got two big agendas. One is building an economy in the UK that works for everyone, making sure everybody has a chance to achieve their potential. And the other is preparing Britain's economy for a global future after Brexit.
Tomorrow, Hammond will unveil his plans for spending and any changes to taxes in a speech delivered to the House of Commons, which will be followed by a debate. He is expected to announce an increase to national insurance tax of 3% for people who are self-employed. David Lauder, a financial advisor at ESPC, hopes that the budget will announce plans to help home buyers, particularly in the capital where prices have rocketed substantially by 24%.
Hopefully, there might be the odd initiatives to help first-time buyers in terms of different ways of helping them get their foot in the property ladder. We've got Help to Buy at the moment, which seems to be working well.
The announcement is also expected to bring with it increases to the weekly state pension. The new flat rate pension is expected to rise by £4. Joe Farrell, a financial advisor at pension specialist Farrell Financial Planning, predicts major changes to the current lifetime allowance.
Traditionally, the annual allowance amount you can put into a pension has been getting curtailed. Slowly but surely in the last few years, as is the lifetime allowance, which is the maximum amount you're allowed to have in a pension. Some commentators have been saying that the lifetime allowance could be scrapped because of the fact that the annual allowance is getting made tighter and tighter. With current economic situation, I don't see that happening tomorrow, but I wouldn't be surprised if it was to be tinkering.
Joe Farrell also commented on the impact that Brexit will have on the outcome of the budget concerning taxes.
It's one of those things. I think Brexit's now a fact of life, and potentially taxes could be going up. Certainly tax reliefs are likely to go down off of the back of Brexit. But I think Brexit now probably has to be seen as a business as usual.
Hammond is facing a backbench revolt over his plans, with those opposing that they go against Theresa May's pledge to help just about managing families. Following the criticism of the Chancellor for not mentioning the NHS or social care in his autumn statement, it is expected the latter will see a top-up of roughly £1 billion. Every budget is a win for some and a lose for others. All eyes will be on the Chancellor tomorrow as he confirms the final details of the budget.
House prices in the capital are set to rise over the next 4 years, according to figures published by property firm JLL. The prices of housing for new buyers will go up 23.4%, with houses in North Berwick, Newtown and Balerno seeing the highest increase. Homeowners and landlords will be delighted with the rise, but first-time buyers are going to find it difficult to find a new home, as wages will remain static for the foreseeable future. Not only this, but students are likely to feel the effects of the increases as well. Denitsa Sikova reports.
To many residents in Edinburgh, the announcement that house prices are going up is nothing new. However, the latest forecast highlights a disparagement in the overall UK average, with the Scottish increase being almost double and 4% ahead of London. Orwell Brogan, business development manager at ESPC, says that house prices are increasing. However, the house market is cyclical by nature, so predicting the prices for 4 years ahead would be difficult. She explains that the estimated 23% increase seems to be slightly high.
It seems slightly high based on what we know, based on what the current trends are. But I think if you wanted to find predictions like that, you could certainly pinpoint certain areas. But we feel throughout Edinburgh, it should remain steady with growth quite manageable.
Edinburgh is now one of the most expensive places to live in the United Kingdom because it's the capital, the financial centre of Scotland and a tourist hotspot. Mrs. Brogan suggests that the rise of property prices in Edinburgh is also explained by the shortage of housings.
Supply is outstripping demand at the moment, so very much it's about first-time buyers planning ahead, planning in advance, looking at the market. Is the area I want to buy in? Is it really popular? Are properties selling quickly? And to engage with a really, really good solicitor quite early.
House buyers in Edinburgh aren't the only people affected. Tenants are also feeling the pinch as rents continue to rise. Data shows that students in particular are now facing a daunting task of keeping up with increases. Douglas Greenwood, a student at Edinburgh Napier University, told me about the problems he has faced in the current climate.
Get in there first, because there's like a serious like disparity between the amount of flats available for students in Edinburgh that are of like an acceptable price and the amount of students that are in Edinburgh. Like there's, it just seems like it's always a struggle. Like even more difficult if you're, you know, a young person who doesn't have that much money in their family, where you have to find that money yourself.
But owning property is expensive. Misconceptions about the market continually dismiss ownership costs. The outgoings for flat ownerships are high, and a rise in the house prices will affect landlords' costs too. Local landlord Robin Poe explained to us the implications of an increase in house prices and the costs that he faces.
If interest rates start to rise, then my monthly outgoings will increase. The legal fees we have to pay every year, the HMO licence fees. You have to pay £400 a year to the council just to send them a piece of paper to send the application in.
Who knows what the immediate future could mean for house owners in Edinburgh? We might know more after tomorrow's budget announcement. On Sunday evening, a gang of 10 people pulled a taxi driver from his vehicle in West Pilton Place in what police are calling a racially motivated attack and robbery. This attack is not the first of its kind this year, as two other taxi drivers were attacked by passengers whilst on duty last month. Iona Young investigates whether these attacks can be prevented and whether these are isolated incidents or if there's been an overall increase in violence towards cab drivers.
Last month, two passengers robbed a 60-year-old female taxi driver before leaving her unconscious by the side of the road in West Calder. Later in the month, in a separate incident, a male Edinburgh cab driver was threatened with a knife before being forced to give the attacker his £7,000 Rolex watch. In the past years, taxi companies have tried to find a solution, and some councils, including Edinburgh, have now approved a scheme which permits taxi drivers to have their vehicles fitted with a safety camera. City Cabs, Edinburgh's largest and longest-serving taxi association, encourages this initiative. Although GMB, a general trade union which represents private hire drivers, agrees CCTV can be effective, it feels more should be done to prevent attacks in the first place. Drew Duffy, one of the GMB officials that deals with taxi members, explains how.
Our kind of, from our union's point of view, what we're trying to do is put pressure on the local authorities or the councils. Because while these men and women are self-employed, they are governed by the local authority, so they could be doing more. So if you look at Edinburgh, for example, they have all taxis must be purpose-built, so they have the option to be able to protect their staff better.
Les McVeigh, a secretary at CityCab, said that having cab cameras will make drivers feel safe at work and will diffuse any situation that may arise in the vehicle between a driver and a passenger. The footage, which cannot be viewed by the drivers, would help police in investigating incidents of crime if they were to occur. We spoke to local taxi drivers in Edinburgh to see if they feel safe on the job.
You do get verbal abuse, but I feel pretty safe generally, yes, I do feel safe, yeah. But the private hire have a different job because they have no security. They have people sitting beside them in the passenger seat.
You have CCTV cameras in your cab?
No, but you can get them, definitely. And you also have to pay the council. You pay for the equipment, the installation, and you pay the council as well.
I just do the day shift, so I feel safe enough here. Yeah. I think there's CCT initiative now that they've actually asked drivers they want installed in their taxis. So if you want CCTV, you can have it. I don't feel I need it, as I say, I feel quite safe.
It is unclear whether these are isolated incidents or if attacks towards taxi drivers are on the rise. We contacted the police in Edinburgh, however, they were unable to give us any facts regarding these cases or crime against cab drivers in general. Drew Duffy from GMB thinks that safety can always be improved.
So I would totally say it doesn't appear to have got any worse, but it certainly hasn't got any better, it just seems to be the same. There's a large proportion of drivers that I think we are aware of that don't report anything. So under-reporting probably happens more. And I think a lot of taxi drivers just see it as part of their job. If they're working on a Friday night or a Saturday night, they just expect that they're going to get some abuse. There's a kind of expectation, I think, from some drivers that that's just part of the job. And we need to kind of break that culture, but it will take time and it's hard.
That was Drew Duffy from Taxi Driver Union GMB. The issue of sexual harassment on university campuses has been a point of discussion today, following a Guardian investigation claiming that harassment is at epidemic levels at universities across the UK. Now senior politicians and representatives from the National Union of Students are calling for a full-scale investigation to be launched and a new set of nationwide policies to be adopted to tackle the problem. Our correspondent, Ellen Beaton, took a closer look.
Sexual harassment on university campuses is at epidemic levels, according to a new investigation published by The Guardian this weekend. Their six-month investigation saw Freedom of Information Act requests sent to 120 universities across the UK, looking into incidents of sexual harassment between staff and students, as well as between university staff members. Oxford University ranked first in the reported number of allegations, University of Nottingham second, and the University of Edinburgh came in third. The numbers were quite low overall, with only around 300 incidents reported nationwide. However, The Guardian are alleging that these official figures are only the tip of the iceberg, and that the actual numbers may be far higher. There are several reasons for a potential discrepancy in numbers, the main one being that students might feel uncomfortable or confused when coming forward. The main issue being zeroed in on by politicians, journalists and activists is that there are currently no national standardised policies in place for dealing with sexual harassment on campus. Rather, individual unis are left to decide for themselves what policies to put in place. Now, following on from the Guardian investigation, there are calls from politicians and activists to bring in a national policy for all universities to adopt. Another issue is that sexual harassment is a very broad thing. Things as basic as catcalling or inappropriate jokes could be considered harassment. Students at Edinburgh Uni, which came in near the top of the list, felt that everyday sexism was an issue on campus.
Yeah, I think all women are kind of subjected to sort of sexist comments all the time, and sometimes they don't even notice it themselves. Like, you know, laughing about a woman that's not wearing makeup or something, whereas with a man it's completely okay and no one notices it. I think it's just, we've got to a point where people aren't even realising it's sexist anymore.
I know it's like double standards, like to not report like a student. It depends where, the context, it's all about like context, I can't generalise. But okay, if it was like really offensive, I would, yeah, definitely I would report it.
It could be that the higher number of incidents at the University of Edinburgh, Oxford and Nottingham are not necessarily symptomatic of more sexual harassment in general. They might just have more effective procedures in place to handle them. The university's website lists the process for reporting sexual harassment, including a variety of contacts for confidential support, in person or through the phone, and ways to file a formal complaint of sexual harassment. Inversely, Edinburgh Napier University, which has reportedly had zero incidents of sexual harassment since 2011, has very limited guidelines on how students should report incidents of sexual harassment. Issues of a sexual nature are confined to only one bullet point on the broader bullying and harassment document available online. Nobody from Edinburgh Napier Student Association was willing to go on the record with us, but we were advised that students who have a problem should speak to the head of academic conduct, go to the counselling and mental wellbeing team, or to visit the iPoint.
The Scottish Government has launched a review into the standards of school meals. The announcement came after the BBC revealed Scottish councils were spending millions of pounds importing food which could be sourced in Scotland. Deputy First Minister and Education Secretary John Swinney said Scotland already had some of the highest standards in Europe, but has confirmed the review into the quality of school meals to see if there is room for improvement.
The government seemed to have been forced into action after a Freedom of Information study by BBC Scotland last week found that Scottish councils spent more than £1 million on chicken from Thailand to be used in school meals last year, with turkey, beef and ham also bought from countries around the world. John Swinney thinks it is important to focus on providing locally sourced produce to children in Scottish schools. Scottish Labour Education spokesman Ian Gray agrees.
Well, I think there's two or three reasons. One is that it's important to support local economies. So I represent East Lothian, for example, where lots of food is produced. And it's important that where public money has been spent on food that we support the local economy. But I guess the more important thing is that it allows the quality of the food to be better monitored.
With almost 366,000 school meals served up in Scottish schools every day, the Scottish Government argued that in improving the standards of food to locally sourced and farmed in Scotland, we will see improvements in a child's learning ability. Ian Gray again.
Well, I think there's a fair bit of evidence that what children eat has a big impact on their capacity to learn. On the negative side, we know that too much in the way of sugary drinks and so on can undermine their capacity to concentrate and learn. And on the plus side, we've seen real evidence that, for example, breakfast clubs, which make sure that children have something decent to eat before the school day starts, that has a positive impact on their capacity to learn. So we need to approach it from both sides. And certainly Scottish Labour have been arguing strongly that we should have breakfast clubs in every school, and that's based on exactly this kind of evidence.
The review has been launched ahead of International School Meals Day on March 9th. We asked some parents in Edinburgh what they thought about the government focusing on sourcing more local produce.
I think it's very important that locally sourced food is provided due to local farmers and their crops and meat being used. I also think it's much better value for money.
I think that would be a good idea. And I think lessons on how to cook it would be good too.
I guess it will benefit Scotland by making sure the food at least is sourced locally and from local farmers. And it will be good to have kind of seasonal food and fresh food from local sources, yeah?
So I'm a nurse, so I don't believe that the food represents a good balance in diet or diet and dietary requirements that my kids need for growth and development.
Demolition starts today on the old Portobello High School. The existing site, located on Duddingston Road, is set to become what the developers refer to as regenerated green space and will be named Trevor Lynn Park. Our reporter, Ross Cooper-Fraser, visited the seaside town.
Over the coming 3 weeks, a digger will be used to demolish the remaining school structure and begin the process of transforming the site area into a new green space for the community. Last year, the public were given a chance to vote on 3 different plans. The winning design included a family-friendly play area with climbing frames and an outdoor classroom connected to the new St John's Primary School. The new school was built on an older local park, so the decision was taken to use the vacant space at the old school to create a new community space. Ross Woodside is a project programme manager at the Edinburgh and Lothian Green Space Trust, who helped in designing the 3 proposed ideas. He told us about their design approach and why exactly the community would benefit from the new green space.
This particular site was chosen for the green space was just to compensate for the area that was lost in Portobello Park where the new school was. And the idea behind it was to improve upon the facilities and the experiences that the local community could have.
We then talked to the Green Party council candidate for Portobello, Mary Campbell, who spoke positively about the use of green space and mentioned more uses for areas like Portobello.
I think I'm definitely looking for ways to better utilise the spaces we have. So there's a lot of groups that look to use kind of abandoned space or empty space that's just grass to do something more productive with, like wildflower planting or vegetable growing.
So, although the demolition has only begun, it will be interesting to see where this area goes in the next couple of years.
And now after all that, over to Luke Barry with our sports news.
Nearly 500 Scottish youth football coaches and officials have been suspended for failing to complete comprehensive background checks. This comes after officials from Scottish Youth Football Association met with MSPs to disclose the matter. Chief Executive of the SYFA, David Little, admitted that a backlog of vetting through the Protecting Vulnerable Groups scheme has been completed, but 488 people have been automatically banned from youth football for not submitting an application to Disclosure Scotland. Mr Little told the Scottish Parliament's Health and Sport Committee that those now suspended would have had access to children, but only under supervision from PVG officials. At the hearing today, he added that those who have been suspended have not had regular unrestricted access to children. Edinburgh Napier News understands that this investigation has been going on for over 2 months. Over to rugby, and Scotland's Six Nations campaign has seen its strongest start in years. With wins against Ireland and Wales and a narrow defeat to France, they head into Saturday's battle for the Calcutta Cup against England with a degree of confidence. England remain undefeated in their campaign so far, with wins against France, Wales and Italy seeing them top the table. With Scotland now ranked the 5th best rugby team in the world, Venn Carter's side are looking to beat England for the first time in 9 years, having not won at Twickenham since 1983. Former Scotland under-21s player turned school coach Eric Milligan is confident Scotland have a fighting chance against England this Saturday.
You know, they hadn't beaten the Welsh in 10 years until a couple of weeks ago, and they've come into a rich vein of form at the moment, and nobody is unbeatable. Anyone can be beaten on their day, and as long as they are able to execute their game plan, play with the intensity that they've shown against Ireland and Wales, then there's absolutely no reason that they couldn't come away with a result.
Other matches in the Six Nations this weekend include Ireland's trip to Wales on Friday evening before Italy hosts France on Saturday. And finally, former football coach Barry Bennell has been charged with 8 counts of child sexual abuse. The alleged incidents took place between 1980 and 1987, with 2 different victims. Bennell faces 3 counts of indecent assault, with 1 boy under 16 and 2 under 14. Bennell will appear in court on March 13th.
And finally, an Edinburgh-based pressure group's protest was cut short after police forced a campaigner down from a tree. Our reporter, Liam Mackay, went to the Cowgates to find out more.
The protest group, Let There Be Light, are campaigning to put a stop to the construction of a new hotel in the Old Town area, after protester Simon Byram was called down from his week-long occupation of a tree in Cowgate to attend court. Fellow campaigner Andreas took his place. Andreas was forced down from the tree after 6 hours.
And I managed to stay 6 hours. I think it's the maximum I could have done, because they told me that anyway they were going to reduce the force. So yeah, I am happy with what I did, but I would be more happy if they don't cut the tree.
The hotel is being built upon land initially intended for the city library.
Up until 2008, the council were poised to develop the land for the library. And then, of course, along came the international banking crisis. And ever since then, Edinburgh Council has lost its way, as with so many other councils and governments around the world. The case is now that the Edinburgh Council is profoundly debilitated by debt. Apparently, at the moment, it stands at £1.7 billion.
The Faslane Camp and Argyll and Bute, who have been protesting nuclear weaponry, had this to say on the matter.
If it's something that you really believe in, then it's always worth protesting. To get your voice heard. We have to stand up for what we believe in.
The Faslane protesters have been campaigning outside the nuclear base in tents and caravans for 35 years. They have done their own extreme forms of protest.
Some protesters actually got onto a Vanguard submarine, and they managed to get in there and smash some of the stuff up in the control room.
The council have yet to approve any plans for the hotel, so we're yet to find out if living in a tree was worth it.
And now for the weather in Edinburgh. Today, a mainly dry day with some sunshine. We can expect cloud to thicken from the west, with some patchy rain this evening. It will be clearer and drier again by morning. Much of Wednesday will be dry, with some sunny spells and a maximum temperature of 12 degrees Celsius. The outlook for Thursday to Saturday: Thursday will be dry and bright with some sunshine. Friday looks cloudier with some patchy light rain. A damp start on Saturday, and then brightening up. The traffic in the city tonight: westbound lane closure on the A8 Morrison Street, and the south footway closed with pedestrian diversion due to the Haymarket development works. There are lane closures and three-quarters way temporary traffic lights at Holyrood Road and Dummy Dykes Road due to cable works. There are queues at Hermiston Gate as 2 lanes are restricted indefinitely. That's all from us today at Radio Energy. Thanks to all our reporters, and thanks to you for listening.
Hear it. Feel it. Listen again at www.radioenrg.net.